This is Pocket Docs. I'm Natalie Kestacher. It was 20 years ago today, Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play. Actually, if you can better believe it, it was 50 years ago next year that the Beatles recorded their masterpiece, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And of all the classics on the album, one of the most evocative and haunting has the most incredible story behind it. Writer and Beatles tragic Sunil Bardamy went on the trail of the fascinating and talented people who somersaulted and waltzed through the song and unearthed a tantalising connection closer to home than he could have ever imagined. Here's for the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there, late of Pablo Frank is there, what a scene.
It's one of the most intriguing songs on the Beatles' epic 1967 masterpiece, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The strange and beautiful being for the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Celebrated Mr. K.
And if you thought the song was amazing, the story behind it is even more fantastic. On a break while shooting the film clip for Strawberry Fields, one of the first songs recorded for the album, John Lennon found himself in an antique shop in Sevenoaks, Kent, and saw a circus poster advertising the benefit for Mr. Kite by Pablo Fanque's Circus Royale almost 124 years before, on the 14th of February, 1843. Inspired by the way the poster echoed the Edwardian spirit of Sgt. Pepper's, and no doubt amused by the way it advertised the last night but three, Lennon bought it and hung it above his piano, turning the poster's text into the song's lyrics.
It was 50 years ago, you have to remember that. What were you wearing, you know, what jacket did you have on? God, I don't know.
Everything from the poster is in the song, he later said. Except the horse wasn't called Henry. It was called Xanthus.
I can remember John explaining that it was all about this poster, and he wanted it to sound like a fairground, and he wanted this and he wanted that.
Richard Lush is a music producer and one of the two engineers working on the song at the time.
John was always very visual about what he wanted with a song. Couldn't necessarily explain it in technical terms, but he could see this kind of picture of the song, and then it was up to George Martin to figure it out how to do it. George Martin sent me up to the tape library just to find some music that would be suitable for this. There was a sound effects library which had fairground effects and that sort of stuff, so I brought those down and we played through that. It took us ages and copied pieces, and that's how the end of the song ended up. George Martin wanted a bar of each of these sounds that we'd found and then cut up tape randomly. So I can't remember whether I threw them up in the air, but the theory was to have some going forward, some going backward, and when we stuck them all together, they were all going forward. So that was a great idea, George. Yeah, we'll remember that one. So then we just physically move some of them backwards and some of them forward. There was one little piece of music which would be the end. So that had to go on the end of it all. And that sort of went da 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 da. I think the song pretty well ended up the way John dreamed it would be, so to speak. I mean, he wanted to show in sound what he saw in picture on the poster. I think if the mission was to make it sound like a fairground, I think that was very well executed.
But what about the people lionised in the poster and song as being celebrated and second to none?
The Hendersons will all be there, late of Pablo Fanke's fair. Have you seen it?
Challenging the world by somersetting.
Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly throw a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world with the blue...
Who were they? And what are somersets and garters?
A garter is just a banner held between two high poles, and normally somebody would break through it as part of a tumbling performance. The other thing which Lennon lifted directly from the circus poster was description of somersets, which is simply an old-fashioned way of describing somersaults, which were normally done with the aid of a trampoline. And again, in that period, a trampoline was not what we would normally associate with the word, but just a sort of springboard.
Mike Dash is a historian and a writer for the Smithsonian magazine, who first revealed the story behind the song in 2011.
Mr. Kite was somebody who was a member of the Fanke circus troupe, and they were doing a benefit performance for him. He was a well-known acrobat, and actually on the original poster you can see an engraving of him doing one of his most celebrated stunts, which is standing on his head on the top of a long pole. It's about 12 foot high, whilst playing a trumpet. The Hendersons were members of Pablo Fanke's troupe at this time, but they later branched out on their own, and the father of the troupe, it was a family affair, became a circus proprietor of his own.
But what about Pablo Fanke, the impresario of the Circus Royale, who held this incredible show for the benefit of Mr. Kite?
Pablo Fanke is a remarkable guy. We actually have no idea why Pablo Fanke called himself Pablo Fanke. I mean, it's obviously an exotic name, and I think that's something that matters quite a lot in the circus. You want to sound a bit more interesting than plain William Darby, which was actually his birth name. He was born in Norwich, we think probably in 1810, and was apprenticed in his youth, after the death of at least one of his parents, possibly both, to a local circus owner, a man called William Batty.
By 1841, Pablo had established his own circus, the Circus Royale, making him...
Britain's, probably the world's, first black circus owner. His father, we know almost nothing about, but he was an African who had come to Norwich either as a servant or possibly even as a slave. But certainly over the sort of 40 or 50 years that he was in the circus business, he proved himself to be a remarkably able businessman.
Pablo was beloved by his fellow circus performers and the public alike, not only for his equestrian brilliance.
Pablo Fanke's most famous feat involved taking his finest jumping horse and jumping directly over an entire carriage with the horses still in the traces.
But because of his incredible generosity to circus performers, down on their luck and struck down by injury. The benefit for Mr. Kite, in which all the proceeds were given to Mr. Kite, was one of many testimonial performances he presented, as well as donating regularly to widows and orphans charities, with one correspondent of the Blackburn Mercury writing,
"Such is his character for probity and respectability that wherever he has been once he can go again, aye, and receive the countenance and support of the wise and virtuous of all classes of society."
From what one can tell from the newspaper coverage that survives, you know, he was an extremely well-respected guy, and one of the oddities, in a sense, knowing what we do about the way in which black people would have been treated in those days, is there's relatively little sign of any sort of racism or prejudice against him. If you read the newspaper accounts of that period, it's relatively rare to encounter any sort of mention of the fact that he was, in fact, a black man. Most of them just focus on his ability and, you know, praise the quality of his performances.
What's most incredible is that a man of colour, as he was described, could be so loved in Britain less than 10 years after slavery was abolished in the British Empire, and even as it was still legal in the United States.
Fanke's circus is probably the most popular one in Britain at this time. It toured very widely. Its base was the north of England. He would travel from side to side, from Leeds through to Manchester, up to places like Oldham and so on. And in each of those sort of places, he could put up his circus tent and perform for 1 or 2 months at a time. And for a lot of people, a visit to the circus was really the entertainment highlight of the year. And so Yeah, we read stories of Franco performing in fact, building his own auditoriums with capacities up to 3,000. Overall, he must have been seen by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the course of his 30 or 40-year career.
Pablo married Susanna Marlowe, the daughter of a button maker. She helped run the show, selling tickets. They had two sons, William and Lionel. On the 18th of March, 1848, in front of a huge crowd in Leeds, as Pablo did his signature trick of leaping over a carriage on horseback and Billy was walking the tightrope, tragedy struck.
Part of the building gave way during the time it was occupied by a crowded audience. Several persons were more or less injured by the fall of the timbers composing the part that proved too weak. And Mrs. Darby, the wife of the proprietor, was killed.
It was probably the lowest point of Pablo's entire career, actually. Pablo's wife was down under the main stand in the ticket booth when the weight of the people collapsed it. Very unfortunately for her, she was actually sort of leaning forward in the booth and sticking her head out from it at the moment this occurred. And several of these heavy timbers came down on the back of her neck and her head, and she was killed instantly. She was the only fatality, actually, in the whole disaster.
Pablo soon got back on the horse, remarrying a few months later and having two more sons. He continued to enjoy a successful career, touring widely.
He was capable of all sorts of other feats as well, and at times when he was sort of slightly down on his luck, we know that he appeared as a tightrope walker in other people's circuses, and he was also an acrobat, so he was a remarkably versatile kind of a guy.
In 1858, a New Zealand newspaper reported the arrival of a troop of British acrobats from Melbourne, including...
Pablo Fenke and son.
Had Mr. Kite's benefactor come all the way down under? It wasn't our Pablo, William Darby, but one William Billy Banham, who may have been Pablo's nephew, his son Billy, or an illegitimate son with another woman. This Pablo made his debut in Melbourne in 1858, with an act in which...
He will ascend his rope 300 feet in length and 70 feet high. He will ascend the rope forward and descend it backward, being one of the most daring feats ever attempted in the colony. This surprising youth has astonished all who have ever witnessed him on the rope.
Well, probably knowing how popular the original Pablo was, Billy Banham performed under that name, Pablo Fenke.
Mark St. Leon is a circus historian, the author of several books on the circus in Australia. He's also the first person to make the connection between the English and Australian Pablo Fenkes.
He was a pretty nefarious character, Billy, in and out of trouble and jail during his time here in Australia. And he died bankrupt in 1869, leaving his wife and four children destitute. The children were dispersed to orphanages and children's homes in Sydney. That's not the only thing. Billy's first wife died in tragic circumstances too. She was murdered by her de facto husband, the de facto husband she'd taken after Billy had abandoned her.
And somewhere in a public park in Sydney's inner western suburbs lies Pablo Fenke, or at least his son, Billy. We're in Pioneer Park in Leichhardt in Sydney's inner west, where my own children used to play. It's a beautiful day.
It may shock you, but we are actually sitting on what used to be a cemetery.
Amy Zarr is the local history librarian for the Inner West Council in Leichhardt.
Before it was a park, it was actually a cemetery that was established in 1868. The last burial took place in 1912, and after that, the park really became derelict and all sorts of unsavoury activities went on according to records. And so in 1941, the government decided that something needed to be done with the 11 acres. The government advertised out to loved ones of people that were buried here to come and move their headstones. There were about 108 that were moved, and the rest are actually still here. The rest were used to level out the park and as bricks for the fence around the park.
So you're telling me there's 10,500 bodies right under the ground we're talking on?
That's right. We're sitting on dead bodies right now.
Do you think those mums and bubs playing over there would have any idea?
No, I don't think they do have an idea at all.
Come over here, have a look at this.
Anne Bickford is an archaeologist, and she did the excavation here in Pioneers Park.
I started excavating because the council wanted to build a carousel next to the children's playground, and they wanted to make sure there weren't any graves in the area of the carousel. I found seven graves. The graves are very shallow. I only found the top of the graves, and they're only about half a metre or less below the grass.
So do you know who was buried here by the playground?
No, I've got no idea who was buried here because we have no plan of the cemetery. You have to have a plan of a cemetery to know who the people are who were buried in these grave plots.
So do you think maybe Billy Banham could be one of the people buried in the excavation site?
Yes, of course, he could be one of them. We've got no idea of knowing who they are.
So although we know when Billy was buried and in which plot he was buried, he could be anywhere. But it's amazing to think that a song written so far away, so long ago, could have such a tantalisingly close connection. Although his father, the original Pablo, also died a few years later, destitute, in 1871...
The local newspapers say that his funeral procession attracted a crowd of about 10,000 people, which is a remarkable number, really. So he was obviously highly popular and highly respected.
He was laid to rest beside his first wife, Susanna. And 30 years after his death, he was remembered by the chaplain of the Showman's Guild of Great Britain thus.
In the great brotherhood of the equestrian world, there is no colour line. For although Pablo Funke was of African extraction, he speedily made his way to the top of his profession. The camaraderie of the ring has but one test: ability.
Pablo Funke is important for you know, much more than just being a part of the Beatles' song list. This may be the reason we mainly remember him, but realistically, we have to look back and say, you know, this is a man who's succeeded against really quite remarkable odds. He's able to make a success of that career over a period of several decades, against all sorts of hardships and, you know, coming up essentially from nothing.
I love the song because it's different. Good lyrics, good ideas. Just ideas. I mean, John's songs were always a bit like that, whether they were influenced by drugs or whatever, but he was always striving for different sounds, different. You never knew which direction he was going into. You know, he was pretty out there. Not out there, just different, just unusual, interesting. He was great. I loved him, and I wish he was still here.
Like his son, Pablo and his incredible life were forgotten until John Lennon walked into that Seven Oaks antique shop 96 years later. And his name lives on in descendants scattered across the globe as his astounding feats live on in a song heard the world over. But alas, we haven't discovered what happened to Xanthus.
Sunil Bademi. And the sound engineer was Mark Don.